There are few things we take more for granted than the words and phrases that we use on a regular basis. That is, until someone swears that it's called something different. They're fascinating variations of American regional English, and it's always a lot of fun when Joan Houston Hall comes by. She's the chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. And Joan, it's always great to see you. Thanks for coming by.
My pleasure.
Well, you know, the dictionary, many of us have been tracking the progress of the dictionary over decades. And for those who aren't familiar with the Dictionary of American Regional English, how did the project start in the first place?
Well, it started a long time ago. The actual work on it began in the 1960s when Fred Cassidy here at the UW English Department was given the task by the American Dialect Society of going across the whole country and finding natives of 1,002 communities and asking them the questions in a huge questionnaire. And all of that information was sent back to Madison, where people in the IT department were working on a really interesting map that allowed us to chart the places where people used different words. And so it goes way back then, but we all know that language changes, and so it's important to keep up with those changes.
Right. And so the data was collected by whom? Who was out in the field? And how did they physically... So they did the questionnaires with people? Did they do audio recordings as well?
They did. We had about 80 field workers. Most of them were graduate students, but a few were faculty members. And they went to these assigned communities where they didn't know a soul. They had to go in cold and find people who had lived there all their lives who would be willing to answer these questions. Now, if a single person answered the whole questionnaire, it could take a whole week. So very often, there were three or four or sometimes even more people who divvied up parts of the questionnaire. One person might say, well, I don't know anything about hunting and fishing and birds and wildlife, but you could talk to Mr. Jones down the road. And so they would divide the questions that way. But for each person, we knew that they were natives of that community, so they were good representatives of that particular location's speech. And we also knew the age, sex, race, amount of education, and community type of each person. So we could analyze responses and say, well, this one seems to be a very rural response, or this is chiefly among women, or this is especially among African Americans.
So many different layers
to
how they're speaking. And so the amount of data is just mind-boggling to me. How many entries are there in the Dictionary of American Regional English?
Well, there are more than 60,000.
Wow.
And those are based not just on the answers that we collected from the people out across the country, but this is also a historical dictionary like the Oxford English Dictionary. And what that means is that we try to find printed examples of the very earliest use of every single word that we enter, and enough other examples to show the history of the word, and then a recent one as well. So in Volume 5, which took us from SL to Z, which was published in 2012, we actually had quotations that were as late as 2011.
Wow. Wow, so very up to date. So we know how dictionaries are usually organized, but the whole point of this dictionary is that there are many different ways to say more or less the same thing. How is the Dictionary of American Regional English organized?
Well, it's alphabetical like any other dictionary, but we don't include what we call standard words, that is, the words that everybody in the country would know. We only include them if they show some kind of geographic variation. For us, a region can be as small as part of a city or as large as most of the country. But we also include what we call folk words. And these are the words that we use among family and friends that we wouldn't learn at school or from books. Things like names for the games we play, or names for toys, or what we call our grandparents, or traditions and superstitions. For instance, one that Wisconsinites will recognize is the tradition of the golden birthday. That was entirely new to me when I came here.
Me too. I had never heard of it, and I felt cheated because I had missed mine without even knowing it existed.
Yes.
And explain a golden birthday for people who might not know.
Okay, I will. And just a few weeks ago, I was walking on campus and overheard a conversation among undergraduates where a young woman was saying, "Oh, I had the best weekend. I celebrated my golden birthday." And had I not known about this, I would have assumed that she celebrated her 50th right. birthday.
But you're probably thinking she looks really good for her 50.
Yeah. So the golden birthday is the birthday on which you turn the same age as the day of the month on which you were born.
So if someone was celebrating their 21st birthday on today, November 21st, it would be their golden birthday. And a big one, too, since it's their 21st.
Right.
Well, you just mentioned Volume 5. There was a big celebration last year when that final volume was published. And then soon after that, there was a funding crisis. What happened and how did it resolve?
Well, I think part of the problem in terms of generating public interest over the decades was that when we got within a decade or so of finishing, Fred Cassidy developed a new mantra, which he loved and we all took up, which was, "On to Z." And so I think that a lot of people who had supported us to get us to Z felt that they were done, we should be done. Mm-hmm. And so individual gifts certainly dropped off, but that was also a function of the very bad economy.
Sure.
Some foundations that had been very supportive for many, many years felt that we had reached a milestone and it was time to move on to other things.
And it was a milestone. I mean, it was a huge milestone.
Yes.
But it wasn't necessarily the ending point.
Exactly. Yes. So we needed to make it clear to the public that we were in difficult straits, and so quite a number of bloggers took up our cause. And over time, we had, first of all, a very generous gift from an anonymous donor, and that was matched by the College of Letters and Science. Mm. And we were grateful that the provost and vice chancellor also came up with some funds. And there were hundreds of gifts from people who simply love language. So we were very fortunate that those taken together allowed us to keep our staff through June of 2014. Unfortunately, though, we're facing another crisis, so we're still in the process of looking for funders.
Well, we're going to talk about your exciting new research, but I want to let you know that you can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Maybe there's a word or a phrase that you've always wondered about where it came from and why we use it. Maybe you have a running disagreement with someone about words that Joan might be able to settle. We'd love to hear from you. And so, Joan, as you said, you know, you got to Z, but language, we all know, is a very dynamic thing. And so you have this amazing resource that's been put together over 50 years, but there's a lot of updating to be done. And so you're taking on an exciting new project. Tell us about this new research.
Yes. Well, for the last decade or so, people have come up to me and said, "Oh, you know, I think American English has just been homogenized by the fact that we're a mobile population and we read the same media. So don't you think that's true?" And I've been convinced for quite a long time that although language is changing, it changes regularly, it doesn't change in the same ways or the same rates in all places. Mm-hmm. So yes, language changes, but I'm not convinced that it's being homogenized. But the only way to be able to answer that question for sure is to do some new research. So with the support of the National Endowment for the Humanities, we're beginning a pilot study right here in Wisconsin. And what we're doing is using many of the questions of our old questionnaire. We deleted ones that were obviously mm-hmm. obsolete, and we're adding new ones about items that didn't even exist
sure.
50 years ago. But we're going back to the same communities in Wisconsin where we did interviews 50 years ago, finding people who've lived there all their lives, and asking them these questions. So we'll be able to see whether things like shoskop for sheep's head, for instance, are still very strong in Wisconsin. And then when we go nationwide, we'll be able to see whether they are still really Wisconsin words or whether they've escaped to a wider geographic area. But in addition to going back to the original communities, We have selected new communities based on the 2010 census to better reflect our population as it is today. And we're going to those communities and we're finding not necessarily lifelong residents, but people who've lived there at least 15 years.
Well, and we'll talk more about how people can get involved. We'll probably get to that after the news. But that was one of the things that jumped out at me right away is that it's pretty unusual now for someone to live their entire life in a single community. And so I wondered how you were going to be able to do that. But now you're it sounds like a kind of a corollary to the original research is people who have lived there for a significant amount of time. So I would actually count for Madison since I've been here 25 years. But understanding that people do tend to move a lot more.
Yes, and we've structured it so that we'll be able to compare the answers from people who have lived in a place for 15 years or longer with those who've lived in a place for their whole lives to see whether there are significant differences. And that may affect how we structure the nationwide interviews. But the thing that's very different this time is that we're not going face-to-face. We're not going to the communities. Instead, we're doing this all online. And so we are testing that methodology as well. We're working carefully with people at the UW Survey Center who have been wonderful in helping us get this structured and ready to go. And we've actually done a pretest in Madison and Algoma.
And we will talk more about that pretest and how you're going to take on this new round of research after the news. We're talking with Joan Houston Hall. She is chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Stay tuned for more talk about language. Language is fascinating. There are really interesting regional differences in how we describe and explain the world around us. And language is evolving all the time. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. I'm glad you could join us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The Dictionary of American Regional English is an incredible resource, and we can proudly claim it as a product of Wisconsin. Joan Houston Hall is the chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English, and we always appreciate when she spends time with us. And Joan, it's always so much fun when you visit. Thanks for coming. And let's see. So, Joan, we were talking about the new research that you're taking on, but I want to let people know how they can join in. You can call 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. This is your opportunity to ask Joan about a word or phrase that you've always wondered about, where it comes from, why we say it. And do you love words? Do you love wordplay? What fascinates you about language? We'd be happy to have you join the conversation. So just before the news, Joan, we were talking about the fact that the dictionary is taking on this new research. And so it sounds like you're both going to be updating current entries, but also adding entries for things that just simply weren't around 50 years ago when the original research was done. What are some of those concepts or areas of information that you're going to be looking into?
Well, we tried to think of our society now and the things that we just take for granted and have words for, but wouldn't have existed long ago. And so we came up with things like, what do you call the raised area across a lane of traffic that's put in there to slow you down?
Ah, I would say a speed bump.
Okay, it's a speed bump. Some people call it a speed hump. Some make a distinction between the two. But in other places, it's a sleeping policeman or a silent policeman.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Or what do you call that piece of cardboard that you put around a hot cup of coffee so you don't burn your hand?
I think I call it a Java jacket.
Yeah, people call it a jacket, a sleeve, a collar, a wrap. Huh. We want to see whether those are regional.
Wow. And then lots of technology things.
What do you call that little device that you put into the side of a computer to transfer data?
And that, I think, I call like three different things, a thumb drive, a memory stick, a USB key. I mean, there are a lot of ways to describe it.
Yeah, a flash drive.
A jump drive. Wow. Yeah. You've got your work cut out for you, Joan.
Those may not be regional, but we'll find out.
That'll be very interesting. Wow. So you were saying that you're rolling out this next part of the research and that you've already started with Madison and Algoma,
mm-hmm.
and then the rest of the state to follow?
On Monday.
That's great. Yes. And there is a link on our Facebook page where you can find out how to participate in the research. The easiest way, if you're not on Facebook, is to go to DARE, that's Dictionary of American Regional English, so DARE .wisc.edu, like education, and you can find the link there. And it says there that while you're looking for fairly specific people or groups of people to participate, that others can fill out the research, and that'll be put kind of in a pool for other projects.
Yes, we are looking for people from specific communities, and those are itemized on the website or on the link to the survey. But we're also interested in the words that anyone has who would like to contribute them. So if you're not from one of the specific communities, all you have to do is click Other when you get to that part of the demographic questionnaire and put in your community, and we will keep track of where your responses are from, and we will include those, though we will give them a slightly different title when we do.
Sure. And you talked about that you're starting with these, with Algoma and Madison, and then rolling out for the rest of the state, and then eventually moving on to the rest of the country. You know, best guess, how long could this updating research take if you're doing a nationwide update?
Well, our plan with Wisconsin is to have the website active for about 6 to 7 or 8 months.
Okay.
And then we'll take probably most of a year to try to analyze mm-hmm. the data and analyze the procedures. And, of course, we will also need to be looking for funding for the next round. But assuming that it works well and that we get funding, then we would roll out a nationwide survey within a 2 years or so of now.
Wow, that'll be exciting. Well, let's go to the phones, and Pedro in Fond du Lac is up. Hi, Pedro.
Hello. Love the topic. I'm kind of a little bit of a linguist myself. I went to Bible school for biblical languages, Greek and Hebrew, and grew up with Spanish and Spanglish and English in the house. But anyway, for a phrase, and whatnot. I have a friend from Utah who laughs every time I say, "Oh, I got to get some stuff done at the library and whatnot," and he just laughs out loud every time. Like, whatnot? What, you guys say whatnot, and nobody says that in Utah. Like, but so is that a Wisconsin thing? And but anyway, as far as the language and your friend kind of mourning how it's been homogenized, I think it's a beautiful thing the way languages shift and change, and especially in Spanglish, I see that a lot. But although I do mourn the death of the adverb, are you doing good? But then actually I teach at chess club here in Fond du Lac at the middle school, and I do make my kids say "may" they go to the bathroom, and when they say "can I go to the bathroom," I always tell them, like, "I'm not sure, can you, or are you able, you know, how to," and they kind of laugh, and everyone looks like they look at me like, "What?" And then the kids that know me, they say, "You got to say may I go to the bathroom." But that I kind of mourn, and the adverb is kind of sad. I wince every time somebody says that they're good when they ask how they are. But it is beautiful the way language has changed. But anyway, so and whatnot.
And whatnot. Well, Pedro, thank you for that call. And you and my mother are kindred spirits, because I had a lot of answers of, "I don't know, can you," when I was a kid, when I should have said may. So and whatnot, Joan.
Well, I don't think it's restricted to Wisconsin, but I'm surprised that your Utah friend didn't know it. I can't tell you off the top of my head its history, but I suspect it goes back pretty far. We'll look it up when I get back to the office.
I did not hear it before living in Wisconsin.
Really?
Actually.
Well, I've been here for 37, 38 years now, and it feels like a part of my vocabulary, but I don't think I was surprised to hear it here.
You just can't remember a life before and whatnot.
Right.
Well, thank you for that call, Pedro. On Facebook, Nikki wrote, "Where does the phrase cool beans come from? Usually used to describe something surprisingly great."
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's a new one to me.
I've heard cool beans.
Have you? Well, there are lots and lots of phrases of that
sort. It's not very current right now, but perhaps I think when I was younger, it was cool beans to say cool beans.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
So there you go. Another one for Joan to work on. Denise in Germantown is next. Hi, Denise.
Hello. Great topic. My grandmother grew up in Black River Falls, and for scolding us, she would always say, "Cry yai." And I've never heard anybody say that other than her.
Okay, well, that's a nice regionalism, and we found that it's almost solely Wisconsin and Michigan. And it often comes in the phrase, for the cry-eye. C-R-Y hyphen E-Y-E is what we're assuming. Maybe something that makes your eyes cry. But yes, that's a nice little well-defined phrase.
And that's one I have never heard. And Denise, what ethnic background is your grandmother from?
She's England.
Okay.
Where the majority of that family came from. But yeah, that was her phrase for scolding all of us.
Cry eye.
Well, have you maintained it?
Yes, it is still used in all the other families.
Good.
Oh, that's fascinating. That's one I've never heard of. If you have an interesting phrase or word from your family or one that you wonder about and wonder where it came from, we'd be happy to have you join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@wpr.org or leave a question or comment on our Facebook page. And Cynthia Schuster, our on-air producer, will be happy to get those into us. Let's go to Deborah in Milwaukee next. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. I'm a Youper, and I'm from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and I just thought of this while waiting. It's not my question, but I just wondered if that word is in the dictionary or if it's a real word. It's spelled Y-O-O-P-E-R.
A Youper.
But I also, growing up, heard kit and caboodle, the whole kit and caboodle, and I think it's spelled with a K. But what does that mean?
Who's that kit and what's a caboodle? I grew up with kit and caboodle also, Joan. And first of all, is Youper in the Dictionary of Regional English?
It certainly is.
Yeah, there you go. So Deborah, you and your people are in there. And what about kit and caboodle?
Well, that's in the dictionary also. We entered it at caboodle, and there are lots of variants. And we say that the C-A prefix is a variant of K-E-R as a prefix, which turns up in a lot of different places.
Oh, okay.
And boodle is also entered, and it seems to me that that was...
So you're saying it comes from kerboodle?
Yeah.
The caboodle.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
And boodle is... I'm looking it up here. Oh, actually, it's from Dutch.
Huh.
B-O-E-D-E-L, meaning estate or property. So the whole boodle is the whole collection of whatever you're
okay.
talking about, or crowd of people. And a kit is a collection also, a combined
mm-hmm.
unit
okay.
of something. So the
saying the whole kit and caboodle is mm-hmm. everything you can imagine kind of thrown together.
Yes.
Oh, well, there you go. I have heard that, Deborah, and I had no idea what that origin was. So thank you so much. And we also had a question on Facebook from Laura. Why do we use the phrase, how come? Is that regional? And I think she's saying how come in the sense of why, like mm-hmm. how come you didn't come last night, or how come you're leaving so early instead of why are you leaving so
well,
early?
Well, I haven't looked that up recently, but my guess is that it goes back to a sort of standardized phrase such as how comes it so, or how comes it to be, in English of centuries ago, and it's easy just to truncate a phrase like that.
Mm. So how come? And Kelly in Adams is next with one that comes up, I think, every time you're on, Joan. Kelly?
Yeah, I know that I have to comment on bubbler.
Oh,
I mean,
that's fine.
That's just a Milwaukee thing, or if that's all of Wisconsin or Midwest, I'm not sure. But I know I travel around the country, and I say, oh, do you guys have a bubbler? And they're looking at me very odd.
Well, you're in good company. It turns out not to be all over Wisconsin. It's mainly in southeastern Wisconsin. And the reason, we think, is that it reflects the marketing area of the Kohler Company as of about 1918, when they started marketing what they first called a bubbling valve, which was the piece in the middle of a porcelain bowl, and it made water come up in a bubbling fashion through the center. And after a while, the bubbling valve was called the bubbler, and then the bubbler was transferred to the whole unit. And once you call one of those porcelain bowls that's outside in a park a bubbler, if you're thirsty inside, you can call the water fountain or the drinking fountain a bubbler. And this is a very distinctly Wisconsin thing, but people are often surprised to find out that folks in Rhode Island and southeastern Massachusetts also talk about bubblers.
That's interesting because I grew up in Chicago and we did not use bubblers as a generic for drinking fountains. The one place where we talked about there being bubblers was at the Lincoln Park Zoo. And they had these large stone, like shallow bowls that were drinking fountains. But there was the drinking fountain part was just a pipe that the water bubbled out of. There was no, you didn't turn it on or off. It was just always going. And we referred to that particular thing as a bubbler, but not any other drinking fountain.
Yeah, well, that makes sense because it was
bubbling
constantly
out of
bubbling
the pipe. Well, great. And also, Kelly, you had a question about another one?
Well, actually, I had one, you know, originally, but I want to bring this. I just want to verify if I'm correct here. The word bar, as in tavern, you know, whatever bar, I was told that came from beer and rail.
Oh.
Hmm. Well, I have not heard that, but
okay, that's not. And the one I called about her too, the one I mentioned earlier was crying out loud. My mother used to say, "Oh, crying out loud," and I thought that was interesting. I say that to my kids too.
Yeah, I don't think that one's regional, but it certainly is expressive.
Yes, it is. You know, you've passed some line when you hear, "Oh, for crying out loud." Well, thanks for that call, Kelly. And let's go next to Laura in Wausau. Hi, Laura.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So my dad used a word when I was younger, difficulty, that I have used periodically and gotten some blank stares, and every once in a while I'll find another person whose parents also used it. But it's not in any dictionary I've been able to find.
And I'm guessing because this was a spoken thing, you don't necessarily know how to spell it.
Well, I can tell you how we spelled
it. Oh, well, Joan's way ahead of me. So, Laura, let's see what Joan has to say.
Well, I guess we do have something under difficulty, but our main entry is under cuffugalty rather than duffugalty. And we say that it's probably an alteration of a Scots word kerfuffle, meaning a disagreement or a quarrel. But if you can wait just a second,
sure.
I'll look for the difficulty.
And Laura, does that match at all the way that your father used it?
Not exactly. I guess normally he used it more as like a quandary, like something you weren't really sure about.
Huh.
Sort of a difficulty or...
Like a difficulty?
Yes.
Okay.
More like that.
Okay.
And I've typed into Google before and seen it come up on urban dictionaries, so...
Well, at difficulty, we say that it's a variant of difficulty, and there are quite a few spelling variants, like difficulty and difficulty, and it just is in our quotes anyway, meaning in a fix, or there's the difficulty, there's the problem, that's the trouble.
Okay.
So you're not alone.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Laura. And now you have something to back it up when you say it to people and they look at you blankly.
Excellent.
Thanks so much, Laura. And Nick in Luck has something to add to the kit and caboodle. Hi, Nick.
I can do that. How are you?
Good.
No, I haven't grown up with an English mother. I ran across a lot of these growing up, and there's so many great Dutch ones, and kit and caboodle was one that I knew quite well. And when people would say they got away, they literally, you're getting away with the entire kit and caboodle. Caboodle, as she said, is basically what could be re-referred to as the loot. And Kit would have been the burglar, his tools that he used to get into your home.
Oh.
So he was able to get away with his kit, not just the caboodle, the loot from the home, but he also got out with his kit, meaning he got away scot-free, free and clear.
Well, and
when you got away with a whole kit and caboodle, it means you got out of there with everything, including your own burglary tools.
Well, and that's really interesting because you just used another word, scot-free. Joan, where does scot-free come from, to get away scot-free? Like,
that's a good question.
Yeah.
I'd have to look it up.
Well, look at that. You're bringing out...
Limitless.
See, Nick, you give us an answer, and then you give us
there
a whole other question. And was there another one that you wanted to offer?
Sure. The other one was, you know, I tend to use this a lot now, and I don't even know why I use it with English family. They're constantly referring to Christmas as crimbo. Now, it could be just slang for Christmas, but you know, are you going to make it this way for Crimbo and Blighty as well? It's just from the English side. I think it's kind of an anglicized business. But Blighty and Crimbo are two that I've really never known, and there must be some historical reference to them. And a quick throw in there for your own sake, for other ones, is I'm quite clear with Jeep. If you know where Jeep comes from, the old word for just a general-purpose vehicle just kind of transformed itself into off the lips as Jeep. So I'll hang up and I'll listen to what you might have to say about Crimbo and Blighty.
Great. Thanks so much, Nick. And Crimbo, have
you
heard that?
Well, I have to confess that's entirely new to me.
Yeah, I've never heard that either. But then again, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to pick up a lot of British things. So Crimbo, that's an interesting
and
one.
I don't know if Blighty is similar to Blimey or what.
Well, Joan will look into those and we'll have her back. Let's see. Let's go to Joe in Nisida next. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I was just calling. I was asking about a word my mom used to say to me when I would be pretty stubborn as a child. Quit being so bucky.
As in upset?
Yeah, or stubborn, or you know, I didn't get my way, or you know, that type of thing. And she said, quit being bucky.
My guess is that it comes from the verb to buck, meaning to...
like a bucking bronco or something.
Yeah,
like
to buck against the traces or to be difficult. But, we have two entries for bucky as an adjective. One is not related. It means having a strong or a rank flavor.
Probably not what she was referring to.
And another is out of order, not working right, or of a person, or the job done by a person, unprofessional. So we don't have exactly what you're talking about, but that's very interesting.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of close to that type of definition.
And where did your mother grow up, or where were you living as a child?
Central Wisconsin, mostly around Beaver Dam, Horicon area, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Well, it sounds like Joan's interest has been piqued, and she'll see if there are other reasons why bucky might have been used for that. We have just a couple minutes left. Let's go to Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I have, when I was growing up, a native Madisonian, and my father was a native Madisonian as well, when we were being rascally, he would say, oh, you rapscallions.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And my husband, after we got married, when one of our cats was being rascally, he would say, oh, you rumpscallion. And he got that from his father, who was at least third generation living in Marion, Wisconsin.
Huh. So rapscallion.
It's the same, meaning the same thing, but just different pronunciation.
So it's rapscallion and rumpscallion?
Rumpscallion.
Well, rapscallion is pretty widespread, so it's not something that we included, but rumpscallion is a delightful variant, and I don't think we collected it.
That's another note for Joan to take. Thank you for that, Stella. And we are just about out of time, but Joan, I want to make sure that people know where they can go to take part in this new round of research.
Yes, the easiest way is just to go to the DARE website, www.dare.wisc.edu, and you can click on a link that will take you to the site at the UW Survey Center. And the first few pages are just a description of what we're doing. And when you get to the part where your interest is piqued and you want to take part, you can just fill out the demographics.
All right. Joan Houston Hall is the chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. Thanks so much, Joan.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening. Stay tuned for Chapter a Day. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller.